Marguerite de Valois by Alexandre Dumas. Volume 1. Chapter 1. Monsieur de Guise's Latin. On Monday, the 18th of August, 1572, there was a splendid festival at the Louvre. The ordinarily gloomy windows of the ancient royal residence were brilliantly lighted, and the squares and streets adjacent, usually so solitary after Saint-Germain-l'Auxerrois had struck the hour of 9, were crowded with people, although it was past midnight. The vast, threatening, eager, turbulent throng resembled, in the darkness, a black and tumbling sea, each billow of which makes a roaring breaker. This sea, flowing through the Rue de Fosses Saint-Germain and the Rue de l'Estrus and covering the quay, surged against the base of the walls of the Louvre, and in its refluent tide, against the Hotel de Bourbon, which faced it on the other side. In spite of the royal festival, and perhaps even because of the royal festival, there was something threatening in the appearance of the people. For no doubt was felt that this imposing ceremony, which called them there as spectators, was only the prelude to another, in which they would participate a week later as invited guests and amuse themselves with all their hearts. The court was celebrating the marriage of Madame Marguerite de Valois, daughter of Henry II, and sister of King Charles IX, with Henry de Bourbon, King of Navarre. In truth, that very morning, on a stage erected at the entrance to Notre Dame, the Cardinal de Bourbon had united the young couple with the usual ceremonial observed at the marriages of the royal daughters of France. This marriage had astonished every one, and occasioned much surmise to certain persons who saw clearer than others. They found it difficult to understand the union of two parties who hated each other so thoroughly as did, at this moment, the Protestant party and the Catholic party, and they wondered how the young Prince de Condé could forgive the Duc d'Anjou, the king's brother, for the death of his father, assassinated at Jarnac by Montesquieu. They asked how the young Duc de Guise could pardon Admiral de Coligny for the death of his father, assassinated at Orleans by Poltrot de Mire. Moreover, Jeanne de Navarre, the weak Antoine de Bourbon's courageous wife, who had conducted her son Henry to the royal marriage awaiting him, had died scarcely 2 months before, and singular reports had been spread abroad as to her sudden death. It was everywhere whispered, and in some places said aloud, that she had discovered some terrible secret, and that Catherine de Medicis, fearing its disclosure, had poisoned her with perfumed gloves, which had been made by a man named René, a Florentine deeply skilled in such matters. This report was the more widely spread and believed when, after this great queen's death, at her son's request, two celebrated physicians, one of whom was the famous Ambrose Pare, were instructed to open and examine the body, but not the skull. As Jeanne de Navarre had been poisoned by a perfume, only the brain could show any trace of the crime, the one part excluded from dissection. We say crime, for no one doubted that a crime had been committed. This was not all. King Charles in particular had, with a persistency almost approaching obstinacy, urged this marriage, which not only re-established peace in his kingdom, but also attracted to Paris the principal Huguenots of France. As the two betrothed belonged one to the Catholic religion and the other to the Reformed religion, they had been obliged to obtain a dispensation from Gregory XIII. Who then filled the papal chair. The dispensation was slow in coming, and the delay had caused the late Queen of Navarre great uneasiness. She one day expressed to Charles IX her fears lest the dispensation should not arrive, to which the king replied, "Have no anxiety, my dear aunt. I honor you more than I do the Pope, and I love my sister more than I fear him. I am not a Huguenot, neither am I a blockhead, and if the Pope makes a fool of himself, I will myself take Margot by the hand, and have her married to your son in some Protestant meeting house." This speech was soon spread from the Louvre through the city, and while it greatly rejoiced the Huguenots, had given the Catholics something to think about, they asked one another in a whisper if the king was really betraying them, or was only playing a comedy which some fine morning or evening might have an unexpected ending. Charles IX's conduct toward Admiral de Coligny, who for 5 or 6 years had been so bitterly opposed to the king, appeared particularly inexplicable. After having put on his head a price of 150,000 golden crowns, the king now swore by him, called him his father, and declared openly that he should in future confide the conduct of the war to him alone. To such a pitch was this carried that Catherine de Medicis herself, who until then had controlled the young prince's actions, will, and even desires, seemed to be growing really uneasy, and not without reason. For in a moment of confidence, Charles IX had said to the admiral, in reference to the war in Flanders, "My father, there is one other thing against which we must be on our guard, That is, that the queen, my mother, who likes to poke her nose everywhere, as you well know, shall learn nothing of this undertaking. We must keep it so quiet that she will not have a suspicion of it, or being such a mischief maker as I know she is, she would spoil all. Now, wise and experienced as he was, Coligny had not been able to keep such an absolute secret, and though he had come to Paris with great suspicions, and albeit at his departure from Chitanya,